Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay for the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-host, Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So good evening, Misty. How are you?
Good evening, Bonnie. I'm doing well. I've got a little bit of a cold, but I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
Hanging in.
On this late Sunday night. And if anybody would like to call in, if you have any comments or questions, I'd like to give you our guest call-in number. If you have a pencil ready, it's area code 646-716-4893. Or I'll mention that one more time, 646-716-4893. Or you can feel free to email me at bonkaye@aol.com, and I'll be happy to read whatever questions you might have that come up. And we'll move it from there. So, Misty, tonight I said that I really wanted to talk about an article I read that I thought was just wonderful, and I think it applies to so many of the women that we work with, and, you know, it's about emotional manipulation. So I was really lucky that a friend of mine, Raina, in California, had sent me this article,
mm-hmm.
and I thought that so many of our women can really relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
So this was from March 16th, and I'm trying to see where the article was posted. If anybody would like a copy of it, of course, you can email me, and I'll be happy to, you know, send it to you. I guess it was on AOL. And it says, Christine Donovan knew something wasn't right in her relationship when she didn't want to go home from work. I felt anxious all the time, she says. I never knew what kind of mood he would be in or if I had unknowingly done something that would have upset him. But Christine wasn't in an abusive relationship, at least none that she had ever seen. He didn't hit me or get violently angry. I just thought we were having normal relationship problems that we needed to work through, she says. The type of guy Christine was dating with is all too common, but there's nothing normal about it, says Dr. Mary Casey, author of How to Deal with Master Manipulators. Manipulators aim to control their partners by pressing the buttons that get them emotional, whether it be making them feel afraid, unworthy, stupid, insecure, angry, or frustrated, she says. But because manipulators are typically passive-aggressive in their tactics, unlike domestic abuse, it can be difficult to tell when you're in a manipulative relationship. While abuse is obvious, victims of manipulation don't even realize they're being manipulated because a manipulator masks their behavior as positive, caring, and nurturing, she says. If you're sad more often than happy in a relationship and something feels wrong, but you just can't put your finger on it, read on to see if you might be shacking up with a manipulative partner and what you can do about it. So here are the 7 signs that, you know, that they mention. 1 is that you're always falling short of your partner's expectations. In an argument, the person being manipulated is often made to feel like they are the ones at fault all the time, says Casey. But what's really going on is that the manipulator is shifting the blame onto them and detracting in subtle, hard-to-detect ways. They'll communicate or say things like, so we're going to have the big interrogation, are we? Or are you going to get all emotional again? 2, you often feel guilty in your relationship and are always looking to repair the damage. The manipulator is skilled at making people feel this way by saying things like, I spent all the money on this gift for you and look how you thank me. Or, you have trust issues, why don't you trust me? You don't often know where you stand with your partner. A manipulative partner often uses concealed or open threats to keep his girlfriend anxious and holding on to the relationship, says Casey. He might use statements such as, I don't even know why I'm here anymore. This isn't working for me. 4, you often feel like you're walking on eggshells around him. Maybe sometimes you're given lots of love and affection. At other times, you're given the cold shoulder for no apparent reason. Number 5, you feel confused in the relationship and keep questioning or blaming yourselves for making your partner angry or frustrated. Manipulators are skilled at never being to blame for any of the problems in a relationship. 6 is you're unhappy in your relationship at least 90% of the time. There's a big red flag for anyone in a relationship. Whether you're with a manipulator or not, it's time to reevaluate why you're with that person. And 7 is you're anxious about telling your partner your plans or about something you've bought. If this is the case, you're most likely being controlled and manipulated. If a few or more of these statements describe your relationship, you're likely to be with a manipulator, and the bad news is he is unlikely to change. Manipulation is a learned behavior. No one is born with it. It's very much a survival strategy learned from early childhood, and therefore changing the behavior is nearly impossible, says Casey. Your time is better invested in developing strategies to protect yourself because you can never change a manipulator's actions. In other words, dump the jerk and look into how you attracted him in the first place. Women who attract manipulators tend to lack self-worth and assertiveness, and they tend to be people-pleasers, says Casey. They trust to the point of ignorance and therefore do not realize that they are being manipulated until they have been in emotional turmoil for some time. It can often be years before they see the situation for what it really is. But once you do recognize it, you can put a stop to it. First, take responsibility and own up to being a victim and a target, says Casey. Admit your flaws to yourself, and most importantly, get out of the relationship and become who you really are, not something someone else wants you to be. So what do you think of that?
Wow. I think that is a great article for many of the women that we work with, because so many of the women do go through a form of emotional manipulation. Also, I mean, it's just emotional manipulation. I think there's so many different targets that they shoot at when you're in these types of relationships. You know, number one, they want to take your power away. Number two, they want to make you feel like you're crazy. And when you find someone that's good at emotional manipulating, they can do all those things. Make you feel like the situation's your fault when you didn't have anything to do with it. I mean, it's a terrible situation to be in. It really destroys your own power and who you are.
Well, I think let's go through some of these points, Misty, and let's make some comments on it. So going back to the 7, and if anybody would like a copy of this article, like I say, just feel free to write to me at bondk@AOL and I'll send it to you. But here it says 7 signs that you might be dating, well, in this case, married to a manipulator.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that in every marriage with, you know, a gay man, that every woman has to at least accept the fact that she's being manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way that you can be married to a gay man without him having to manipulate you, since he's living in a lie every day, correct?
I have to agree with that, yeah. That's a good point.
So, to some degree, they are manipulating things. So the mm-hmm. first one is that you're always falling short of your partner's expectation. And it says, in an argument, the person who's being manipulated is often made to feel that they are the ones at fault all the time. But what's really going on is a manipulator is shifting the blame onto them and detracting in subtle, hard-to-detect ways. They'll commonly say things, so we're going to have the big interrogation, are we? Or are you going to get all emotional again?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that. How do you feel on that one, Misty?
Wow. Excuse me. How do I feel on that? I experienced that. As a straight wife, I would experience that almost on a daily basis. Anytime
mm-hmm.
that I would try to bring up something to talk about, in a very respectful way, because it was something that I wanted to know about, I was usually told, here you go again. You don't want us to get along. You see, this is your fault. You're trying to argue again. Only when I was trying to talk about a subject, to bring something up, he would go ahead and start with those sorts of things, already start the manipulation before I could even start a conversation. So the communication was always shot down. We couldn't communicate because he'd always start out with that emotional type of manipulation. And many of the women I work with experience the same thing.
And one of the statements that I often hear women make, and that certainly happened in my relationship, you know, with my gay, you know, ex-husband, was that when I knew something was wrong in the relationship and I wanted to go for counseling, he always manipulated to the fact that you think something's wrong in the marriage, I'm not having the problem, you're having a problem.
Yes.
You know, we don't need to go for counseling because I'm fine with the marriage, it's you who's having the problem.
Exactly. I heard that one many times. Many times during my marriage I heard that. If I needed counseling, you know, he was fine. He was okay with the marriage. I was the one that needed to go see the counselor or the therapist as well.
Right. And I think that's a really, you know, important form of manipulation that women have to realize that, you know, all of a sudden that their husbands are thinking, you know, everything's fine in the marriage because they don't want to have to admit to what the problem really is. And then the women feeling they're failing in the marriage because they're the ones who aren't happy.
Exactly.
So that's a common form of manipulation I see a lot. Then it says here, you often feel guilty in your relationship and are always looking to repair the damage. The manipulator is skilled at making people feel this way by saying things like, I spent all this money on this gift for you and this is how you thank me, or you have trust issues, why don't you trust me?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that one?
I think that one falls right into the category of what I call dancing inside that circle of crazy. Things of that nature will suck you right into dancing inside the circle of crazy because you constantly find ways to readjust to make things better because you accept the problems at hand with the marriage and the relationship as your fault, not theirs. So, you know, because you're told that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that, you know, you need to adjust what you're doing. I'm okay with things. You know, you're not doing this right. You're not doing that right. If you were better at this or if you were better at that. So those sorts of things really just send you spinning inside that circle of crazy and just dancing and dancing and changing everything about yourself and making you try harder and harder and harder when nothing you do is going to fix it.
Right, and I think it's very typical of our women to keep repeatedly try to repair the damage, as they say, that we know something's wrong in the marriage, and since our husbands can't be honest with us and tell us what the problem is, then we internalize and we are creating the problem and we have to try to fix it. And we run around, like, you know, in not only the circle of crazy, but in repeated circles over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's almost like you're juggling all the time, and no matter where you're picking up, you know, catching the balls, they still keep falling down. And you just can't seem to get things to run on target.
Exactly.
And the next one, you often don't know where you stand with your partner. The manipulative partner often uses concealed or open threats to keep his wife anxious and holding on to the relationship. He might use statements such as, I don't even know why I'm here anymore. This isn't working for me. You know, dangling that carrot over her head that, you know, if you complain, and maybe I just shouldn't be here. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. And also, I think it's equally as true is to have them say, you're so lucky to have me. No one else will
mm-hmm.
have you.
Nobody else will love you the way that I love you.
Exactly.
I mean, I heard that a lot of times.
Yep.
And, you know, you start believing that after a while.
Sure do.
Because when you feel that you're incompetent and incapable and you're not being successful in a marriage and someone keeps telling you, nobody will ever love you the way that I do,
mm-hmm.
then you start thinking, you know, maybe there is something really wrong with me and I should hang on to this person. But I think that's a common form of manipulation also. Also, the one where you often feel like you're walking on eggshells around him.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe sometimes you're given lots of love and affection, and at other times you're given that cold shoulder for no apparent reason. What do you think on that one?
Absolutely. It's a very conditional type of love relationship. If you do this, I could love you. If you were more of this, I could love you better. It's your fault that I don't love you more because of, you know, all those sorts of things. So you're always walking on eggshells. You never know what mood you're going to get of the day sometimes, you know. Are they going to care for you? Are they going to just blast you with negativity? Are they going to blame you for something else, call you names? So it's, you never know what to expect.
And I think part of this is true, too, that sometimes you get lots of love and affection, and at other times you're given the cold shoulder, you know, for no reason at all. And I think that what women hang on to is the fact that it's not all bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear this so many times from women, well, the whole thing isn't terrible all the time. You know, it's just some of the time, and he can be really nice other times. Well, in almost no cases, except for maybe yours, Misty, I mean, but
yeah,
on a daily basis.
I think I do have an exception here.
Yeah, but I mean, usually these guys can be very nice and very, you know, they seem like they really love you and they say the right things. And so, you know, you're hanging on to those moments.
Yeah.
You know, there are good moments in most marriages, but, you know, they certainly don't outweigh the other moments when you don't know what's wrong and they're not communicating with you because they're really emotionally detached, you know, because they're living a life that's not theirs to live and they can't pretend all the time, although a lot of them do a good, you know, job of it for a long time. But, you know, a lot of times they go into some kind of detachment. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of where that is.
Mm-hmm.
Then it says you feel confused in the relationship and keep questioning or blaming yourself for making your partner angry or frustrated. Manipulators are skilled at never being able to blame for any problems in a relationship. How do you feel with that?
Well,
like how
yeah.
many times did they ever say, I was wrong, honey, I'm sorry?
I don't think I ever heard that statement in my marriage. I don't think I ever heard that.
I very rarely ever heard it. I mean, every now and then. But, you know, not very often. And I think most of them are looking to place the blame, you know, outside themselves
yeah.
because they don't want you to feel for a moment that, you know, they're responsible in any way. And you know what? I think in some ways our gay husbands really do believe we are responsible for, you know, the problems in the marriage because mm-hmm. they're unhappy. You know, they're unhappy being married to us. It doesn't mean they don't love us. Doesn't mean they don't love the family, but they're just not happy because they're gay men living in a straight marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel that something's wrong and they can't understand that it's them and not us.
Yeah.
And here it says, you're unhappy in a relationship at least 90% of the time. This is a big red flag for anyone in a relationship. Whether you're with a manipulator or not, it's time to reevaluate why you're with that person. So,
yeah.
Misty, I'm going to let you talk to that with the 90% of the time. How do you think your marriage went?
I could say even 99% of the time, maybe. Yeah. I mean, absolutely not. I have to say, in all honesty, it was miserable 90% of the time. There were very few good moments. And it wasn't good moments as much as probably about 10% of the time was calm moments. I mean, he
mm-hmm.
was still living his own life, and I was living my own life inside the same house. But it was more calm moments. And then it was those moments that I would tell myself that I could make it work. I could try harder. I could do more things because I was believing these things were my fault. Because I was told 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, things were my fault. It would get to the point to where this was a huge manipulation thing my ex would do. He would just get up and not talk to me, not even speak. And I would say, okay, what's wrong? What are you mad about? And the only words he would say is, well, you must really don't care if I have to tell you what you did to me. And he would not speak for 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 days at a time like that and would never
uh-huh.
tell me what he was mad about because he always said he should not have to tell me. I should know what I had done. And that was very common. And it was just really rough living under those types of manipulation. Because once you're broken and once you're dancing inside that circle of crazy so hard, you know, I know this sounds so unrealistic to some people looking in on the outside. And it's unrealistic of me to even be saying this because to think that I lived this, you know, over 10 years ago. It's hard to even imagine this, but I did. And it's when you're being manipulated in ways like that, it's just unbelievable the things you will fall for, unbelievable the things you will blame on yourself and take responsibility for. You just accept that blame and responsibility because, you know, a manipulator gets you to the point to where you're broken enough that they can almost get you to believe anything. And that's what can happen in an abusive type situation. And I fell for it, absolutely fell for it. And I believe that the things of the marriage were my fault. If I would have, let's see, if I would have washed the dishes better, if I would have washed the dishes more often, if I would have not had left dishes in the sink, if I would have washed clothes correctly, even, and I'm so serious when I say this, if I would have folded the towels better, because I did not fold the towels correctly. I mean, it was just even little things like that. So constantly hearing that all the time, it wears on you. And it's just unbelievable what things like that can do to break you even further. It's just really sad that, you know, women go through that and in these types of relationships. And not all gay straight relationships are like this. I'm not saying that. Mine was full of abuse, as I've been very open with on this show. So it's when the two are mixed, it's just disastrous. I can't say there was 10% good time. I could say there was 10% of calmness sometimes, and definitely 90% being miserable.
And I do want to though state, Misty, I mean, to clarify that a little bit more, that even though you were in an abusive relationship in many ways, it didn't start out as an abusive relationship.
No,
I mean, you
not.
Wouldn't have married a man knowing that he was abusive, like people would say, well, didn't you know? Just like they
exactly.
say, well, didn't you know your husband was gay? I mean,
exactly.
abusive guys don't start out by, you know, being, in almost all cases, I mean, you know, they may be manipulative or they may seem a little controlling, but they're usually not, you know, like I say, so abusive in the beginning because
absolutely.
They're trying to win your heart over. And to get you into a control position, wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. We dated for almost 2 years before we got married. I think it was about 2 years. And I didn't see any signs of that. It wasn't until, actually I started seeing signs of it once we moved away from where both of our families were. We moved to near University of Kentucky, where we're both going to school in Lexington. And that's when it started. I was away from my family, he was away from his family, and you know, I was looking forward to it. It was a new beginning for both of us, but it wasn't the beginning I had in mind. And that's when, like, just certain things were, I guess you would say, privileges almost taken away from me. And it wasn't privileges were taken away from me, but my confidence was just eating that so hard, I didn't believe I could hardly do anything anymore, you know, and it was just really sad to just listen to all the time, just little things. And you're right, it doesn't start out as big things. It could start out as little things such as, well, you know, you can't cook very well. I wish you could cook better. And then it escalates from there, literally. And it's bit by bit, piece by piece. It doesn't all happen at one time because that's how a manipulator really knows how to do it, because if it happens at all at one time, you go step back and say, oh, my goodness, this is crazy. I'm not going to put up with this stuff. I'm going.
Exactly.
But a master manipulator takes away, you know, it's just like the grains of sand on the beach. You know, there's millions and millions of grains if you try to build a sandcastle. But, you know, it's like building that one grain at a time. You know, it's slowly, and it's so slow you don't even know you have that castle built until it's there. So, I mean, that's what I would say with this manipulation. You know, they take away things, or they take away your power. They take away who you are bit by bit, piece by piece. And it's little bits at a time. It's not huge.
Also, I think that, you know, you brought up a good point that many women write to me about or discuss with me, that, you know, it really does happen once you become more isolated and away from your family.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of these guys want to move away from where they were. I've had women who told me they've moved place to place to place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time they start to get comfortable, oops, it's time to move.
Yep.
And I think that by moving you around, they have that kind of power over you also, because you're isolated, you're not near your family. And once again, they really, you know, take away your sense of who you are one strand at a time. It's not like it happens in a day.
Exactly.
You know, it starts out, like you said, with little things. And even with, you know, if you read about domestic violence, you know, in general, not in your situation, you know, because I've studied a lot with domestic violence and worked with a lot of women who were abused over the years, that even if they smack you or they physically assault you, you know, then it's all apologies. Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. I don't know why I did this. You know, in the beginning, there's a lot of that. And you know I love you, and, you know, I'm just stressed out. and, you know, I never will do it again. And, you know, you really want to believe it. And, you know, as it just progresses, you start thinking, well, you know, maybe I do deserve this. You know, maybe I'm just so annoying to him or doing so many things wrong. I can see where he gets frustrated. And you start to lose that whole belief system in yourself and start falling into that abuse cycle with him.
Exactly. You fall right into it because they've taken away your ability to even think for yourself, your ability to believe in yourself, and your own sense of reality has become distorted. Because you believe
it's like any other kind of brainwashing that people go through.
Absolutely.
You know, you hear something repeated every day, you know, and this is your only sense of reality, then you start, you know, buying into that.
Yeah, because you got to realize, with someone being like that, they are taking you away from the people that ground you, the people that know you, like family, friends, and things like that. If they don't take you away, you can bet they're going to take more of your time away from people like that. So you don't have time to get in check with those people, to get in tune with those people, to remind yourself of who you are, what you're good at, and all those things. Because in doing so, you know, to pull you away from that, it does. It does distort your own reality of who you are, and you quit believing in yourself.
Exactly. And the last thing it says here, if you're anxious about telling your partner your plans or about something you've bought, in this case, you're most likely being controlled and manipulated. And I think that's so true in relationships. Like, if you have to hide things, I mean, I certainly, you know, felt anxious about having to tell or ask, you know, to that point, you know, that I need something or I bought something for myself and you have to hide it because you're going to be afraid of his reaction. I mean, this has to be really, you know, key stuff to you, that this is not what a relationship should be about.
No.
And I think that women who really haven't been in healthy relationships have nothing to gauge it by. You know, they just think this is what it is. And, you know, even though some of our women like you came from really, you know, healthy family backgrounds, a lot of us didn't. A lot of us came from really dysfunctional backgrounds, you know, starting with me. You know, I came from a very dysfunctional type of, you know, family background. So for me, I only knew from craziness. You know, I grew up in distortion. So for me, it didn't mean anything because I just thought this is the way life is supposed to be.
Exactly.
And you don't know any differently, but, you know, if it doesn't feel right, if you're not happy, if something just seems off, you know, and you know, that's what has to be a red flag to you that, you know, there's something wrong in my marriage and that I must do something to change it. You can't change the marriage, certainly, but you can change yourself. And I know that it's so hard for women to do that while they're living in the midst of it. I get this cry for help, you know, many times each day from women who are so stuck, they don't know where even to begin to, you know, move out of it. Because you just feel it so hopeless. And that's what these marriages do. They give you this tremendous sense of hopelessness. And helplessness also.
Yes. They go hand in hand.
And what she did say that I thought was very good is Dr. Carey. She's a PhD from Australia. And she did say that manipulation is a learned behavior. No one is born with it. It's very much a survival strategy learned from early childhood. And therefore, changing the behavior is nearly impossible. Now, she had some people disagree with her on their comments on this article, saying, well, if something's learned, then it can be unlearned. It just takes a lot of time and patience and counseling. Well, in normal situations where you have a straight wife and a straight husband, you might have a better chance of that. But when you have a gay husband, there is no chance of that because the manipulation is all around the fact that he's gay. And that's the part that can't change. So this is not a relationship that for women who are looking, you know, that maybe this behavior can be unlearned, it's not going to make any difference because you still have the same underlying, you know, factor that you have a gay husband. And there's nothing you can do about that. But I do feel that learned behavior, it can be changed. I know that I worked on some of my own learned behaviors when I was raising my children. Because, you know, I would get angry and yell out the same things my parents used to yell at me, and I used to hate it. But I had to really be conscious of it and work every day at it. And, you know, really, you know, it was an effort that I had to make because I wanted to change. But a lot of these guys who are manipulative don't want to change. you know, they're happy being manipulative. That's who they are. Mm-hmm. And especially when they're living a life that's not theirs to live. So I wouldn't look for any help with that. But I thought it was a really good, you know, article for women to understand about emotional manipulation. And that leads me to another one I have that I think is really good, kind of on this topic, because I think when you're emotionally manipulating, a lot of times you find passive-aggressive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And passive-aggressive behavior, according to this article that I have, it says it's a form of covert abuse. And it says passive-aggressive or relating to or having personality disorder characterized by habitual passive resistance to demands for adequate performance in occupational or social situations as by procrastination, stubbornness, sullenness, and inefficiency. And it says a little bit about this, which I think is really true for many of our situations, that passive-aggressive behavior is a form of covert abuse. When someone hits you or yells at you, you know that you've been abused. It is obvious and easily identified. Covert abuse is subtle and veiled or disguised by actions that appear to be normal, at times loving and caring. The passive-aggressive person is a master at covert abuse. Passive-aggressive behavior stems from an inability to express anger in a healthy way. A person's feelings may be so repressed that they don't even realize they are angry or feeling resentment. A passive-aggressive can drive people around him crazy and seem sincerely dismayed when confronted with their behavior. Due to their own lack of insight into their feelings, and passive-aggressive often feels that others misunderstand them or are holding them to unreasonable standards if they are confronted about their behavior. So here's some of the common behaviors for passive-aggressive people. Ambiguity. I think of the Proverbs, actions speak louder than words when it comes to the passive-aggressive and how ambiguous they can be. They rarely mean what they say or say what they mean. The best judge of how a passive-aggressive feels about an issue is how they act. Normally, they don't act until after they've caused some kind of stress by their ambiguous way of communicating. Forgetfulness, the passive-aggressive avoids responsibility by forgetting. How convenient is that? There is no easier way to punish someone than forgetting that lunch date or your birthday, or better yet, an anniversary. That happens to me a lot. Blaming, they are never responsible for their actions. If you aren't to blame, then it's something that happened at work, the traffic on the way home, or the slow clerk at the convenience store. The passive-aggressive has no faults. It is everyone around him who has faults, and they must be punished for their faults. Lack of anger. He may never express anger. There are some who are happy with whatever you want, on the outside anyway. The passive-aggressive may have been taught as a child that anger is unacceptable. Hence, they go through life stuffing their anger, being accommodating, and then sticking it to you in an underhanded way. Fear of dependency. From Scott Welzer, author of Living with a Passive-Aggressive Man, unsure of his autonomy and afraid of being alone, he fights his dependency needs, usually by trying to control you. He wants you to think he doesn't depend on you, but he binds himself closer than he cares to admit. Relationships can become battlegrounds where he can only claim victory if he denies his need for your support. Then there's fear of intimacy. The passive-aggressive often can't trust. Because of this, they guard themselves against becoming intimately attached to someone. A passive-aggressive will have sex with you, but they rarely make love to you. If they feel themselves being attached, they may punish you by withholding sex. Obstructionism. Do you want something from your passive-aggressive spouse? If so, get ready to wait for it or maybe to never get it. It's important to him or her that you don't get your way. He will act as if giving you what you want is important to him, but rarely will he follow through with giving it. It is very confusing to have someone appear to want to give to you but never follow through. You can begin to feel as if you are asking too much, which is exactly what he wants you to feel. Victimization. The passive aggressive feels they are treated unfairly. If you get upset because he or she is constantly late, they take offense because in their mind it was somebody else's fault that they were late. He is always the innocent victim of your unreasonable expectations, an overbearing boss or that slow clerk at the convenience store. Procrastination. The passive-aggressive person believes that deadlines are for everyone but them. They do things on their own time schedule and be damned anyone who expects differently from them. And it says, the passive-aggressive and you. A passive-aggressive needs to have a relationship with someone who can be the object of his hostility. They need someone whose expectations and demands he can resist. A passive-aggressive is usually attracted to codependents, people with low self-esteem, and those who find it easy to make excuses for others' bad behaviors. The biggest frustration in being with a passive-aggressive is that they never follow through on agreements and promises. He will dodge responsibility for anything in the relationship, while at the same time making it look as if he is pulling his weight and is a very loving partner. The sad thing is you can be made to believe that you are loved and adored by a person who is completely unable to form an emotional connection with anyone. The passive-aggressive ignores the problems in the relationship, sees things through their own skewed sense of reality, and is forced to deal with the problems, or will completely withdraw from the relationship and you. They will deny evidence of wrongdoing, distort what you know to be real to fit their own agenda, minimize or lie so that their version of what is real seems to be more logical. And then it says that the passive-aggressive will say one thing, do another, and then deny ever saying it the first thing. They don't communicate their need and wishes in a clear manner, expecting their spouse to read their minds and meet their needs. After all, if their spouse truly loved them, she would just naturally know what's needed or wanted. The passive-aggressive withholds information about how he feels. His ego is fragile and can't take the slightest criticism, so why let you know what they are thinking or feeling? God forbid they disclose the information and you criticize them. And it says about confronting a passive-aggressive, beware. If you confront the passive-aggressive, he will most likely sulk, give you the silent treatment, or completely walk away, leaving you standing there to deal with the problem alone. There are two reasons for confronting the passive-aggressive. One, if done correctly, you may be able to help him gain insight into the negative consequences of his behaviors. Two, even if that doesn't happen, it will at least give you the opportunity to talk to him in a frank way about how his behavior affects you. If nothing else, you can get a few things off your chest. So here are some ways you might approach a passive-aggressive. It says, make your feelings the subject of the conversation and not about his bad behaviors. Don't attack his character. Make sure you have privacy. Confront him about one behavior at a time. Don't bring up everything at once. If he needs to retreat from the conversation, allow him to do it. Have a time limit. Confrontation should not stretch on indefinitely. If he turns the tables on you, do not defend your need to have an adult conversation about your feelings. Be sure he understands that you care about what happens to him, that you love him, that you're not trying to control him. You're only trying to get to the bottom of your disagreements and make the relationship better. So what do you think about that?
I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting for sure. I mean, there's lots of relationships have the passive-aggressive type person in there, and it's not easy to deal with. It really isn't, because it doesn't always appear to be an issue in the beginning, and then as you go on, you will start to feel the manipulation of it. It's harder to untangle sometimes, I think, the passive aggressive.
Yeah, and I think this all ties into the emotional manipulation, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think a lot of our husbands have these kind of behaviors. Passive-aggressive, emotional, manipulation. And we certainly have a lot of women who talk about narcissism. That's
mm-hmm.
another hot topic or common topic for, many of the husbands that, we're married to. Would you say that's another mm-hmm. one that comes up a lot?
Absolutely. It's, it comes up very often it's present in a lot of the marriages, the gay straight marriages, at the expense of everyone else around. You know, it's, yeah, very common.
And we've talked a lot about, you know, sociopathic behavior, because a lot of, you know, gay husbands are sociopathic, and I think that's, and I'm not saying it to be insulting, I'm just saying it to be, you know, to shed some insight that someone who's, you know, going to live a lie every single day of his life, not be honest about it, you know, to some degree has to become sociopathic. They just fall into these lies because this is their defense rather than face the reality of what their lives are about. So
yeah.
I think when you live a lie every day, you just become a liar.
Yeah, yeah, it changes. When you repeatedly lie, it changes, it even changes who you are as the person lying. So it's, yeah, that's not healthy. And it's just too much to try to keep up with what's the last lie you told, you know. And it becomes overwhelming, and you can't keep your story straight. That's why truth is always easiest.
Well, I think that if you can't have a relationship that's based on truth, then it's just not a real marriage. And
yeah,
that's why, so many of the women, and I would say I get anywhere from realistically 40 to 80 letters any given week from women who are in pain. And, you know, as I read each story and I see the pain that each woman's going through, and, you know, I give her, send her information, our newsletters, information about this radio show, our support group. You know, I think that women have to realize that this is not a way you want to live. You know, this is not what life is about. This is not what marriage is supposed to be about. And even if you've come from a dysfunctional family and you don't really know what marriage is supposed to be about, which many of our women have been in that situation, you should know what you don't want to have for yourself. And mostly you should know what you don't want your children to have to grow up in. I mean, if you've come from a dysfunctional family, it's like I'm reading a book right now that a friend of mine wrote. And, you know, she was an actress. And she, you know, was in a number of movies. And, you know, so she's telling her life story. And she wrote, and she was little, that she came from a very dysfunctional home where her mother and her father were fighting constantly. And she said she, you know, used to feel responsible for it because, you know, they always made her feel, well, they're staying together because they have a child. And she says, they just don't realize how much I would have been so happy if they would have divorced and I could have had four happy parents, you know, instead of two miserable parents.
Exactly.
And I think that people just don't understand how children really feel. And they think that, you know, they leave a marriage, it's going to affect the, you know, child in a negative way. But I still contend that if you don't leave the marriage, it's going to affect the child in a worse way. I mean, I come from a dysfunctional family that stayed together far too long and really skewed my own sense of what values and reality, you know, were about.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I ran into so many problems in my own life. But I think that all of these articles really keep resounding on one common theme, and I think you might address this, Misty, about, you know, your sense of self-esteem. That when you have self, and when you don't have a strong sense of self-esteem, it's so much easier to fall prey into these relationships. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. Self-esteem. You know, if you don't work on anything else, everyone needs to work on self-esteem, because when you have, excuse me, when you have a low sense of self-esteem, you're going to fall for anything. You know, you're going to be manipulated so easily. And manipulators know that. They know the type of person they can manipulate. And if you're in a relationship with a person, you know, a straight wife and a gay husband, and they're manipulative, I mean, it's going to tear your self-esteem. It's just going to pull it down. You're not even going to know what you want to have for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. I mean, it can be that bad to where that you just don't even have the sense to think you have enough sense to make a decision on things, even the smallest thing. Self-esteem is key in building yourself back up, and no one can give you self-esteem except yourself. However, others can take your self-esteem away if your self-esteem is low and you let them. So, I mean, it's a constant building. You have to keep building it up in little ways, little things that make you feel good, little things that refill you, little things that make you believe in yourself again. You have to believe in yourself. No one should walk the face of this earth that doesn't believe in themselves. You truly have to believe in yourself. And it's not always easy. You know, you just don't wish it to be in it happening. You have to work for those things. And
well, I think another issue that people have to realize is that every one of these articles that I read, they're not written about gay men. They're written about men.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that if we don't learn to repair ourselves, mm-hmm. we are going to find someone else who's a predator. And
exactly.
they don't have to be gay. There's so yep. many straight predators out there who have all of these faults, who are looking for women who are vulnerable, caring, giving women like we are. And
exactly.
that's not to say that you don't have to have good self-esteem because you're caring and nurturing, but you really have to look inside to see why you would allow yourself to be in a relationship where you have to be constantly looking to fix something that shouldn't have been broken to start with.
Exactly. Exactly. And you gotta go into a relationship, like you said, even if you've separated yourself, divorced yourself from the gay, straight relationship, and you know, you've worked on yourself, but yet you jump in too quickly before your self-esteem, you've built it up. I mean, you're heading for disaster. You're going to repeat the same relationship issues. It may not be with a gay man, but you're going to repeat similar issues. Is it someone that's distant, someone that can't care for you, someone that is very conditional with their love? They will only love you if you do this or that. I mean, it's going to be very similar.
And it is, and when I hear these stories, you know, like for instance, I'd like to mention my, you know, support group member, Kathy, I'm keeping you anonymous and not giving any further information, but Kathy's been with me for a number of years, and I really love her. She's a wonderful woman, kind, giving, generous of nature, and, you know, since I've known her, she's been in 3 bad relationships and keeps making the same mistakes, you know, looking for the wrong things, hoping that she can make things better because she's a natural caretaker.
Huh.
And so many of the other women I know who have jumped into relationships, you know, without changing who they are because they feel that they want to feel love again. They want to feel as if they are loved again because they need to know that they're validated by a man loving them for the right reasons.
Yeah.
You know, I think these marriages really screw up our heads more so than other, you know, straight marriages. You know, where you have a straight partner. Because, you know, at least in a marriage where you had a straight husband for many years, you know, most women were desired and did have good sexual relationships. You know, they understood what it was to have passion and intimacy. And they don't have to validate themselves if a marriage ends. But with our women, you know, having been, you know, put down for so many years and made to feel so undesirable,
uh-huh.
and not wanted, and, you know, non-sexual relationships in a marriage, that, you know, when the marriage ends, they're looking to jump right away to validate, you know, that they are a woman, that they still have sexual esteem. And I always tell women, you know, there's nothing wrong with going out and, you know, doing things and having fun, but you're not ready for any kind of emotional entanglement. You know, if you want to go and prove that sex can be great and you can have fun, I'm all for that. I'm certainly not against that at all. But to think that you're ready to be in a regular long-term relationship with somebody is very, you know, almost impossible unless you really do some healing and recovering on your own first.
Absolutely.
That's going to happen again because that's who we attract. Even
exactly.
though not consciously, but these guys know how to look for us. You know, they know women who are caring, loving, vulnerable. You know, they look for women who have been in bad marriages because they feel, okay, you've already been in one. You know, you're going to be looking for something else, and I can jump in there. And
exactly.
that's why there are so many men out there who are predators in different kinds of ways. It's not just a gay thing. Certainly there are many, you know, straight men also who are like this, and that's who these articles are written about. They're not written about gay husbands.
Exactly.
So they talk a little bit about, you know, repairing yourself.
Wow. Repairing yourself. You know, you have to start with yourself. You cannot seek someone out to heal you. I think that's a big mistake our women sometimes make. You have to look within. You really do. And looking within, you've got to build on, there's several building blocks, and I think some of the most important ones are, number one, self-love. You have to learn how to love yourself all over again. And that's not easy. That's
well,
not
excuse
easy.
Me, not all over again, because the reality is a lot of women never really love themselves at all.
That's true. That's a good point.
Especially
in our culture.
Well, if you came from an abusive family or a dysfunctional family, chances are you were never made to feel that good about yourself to start with, so you wouldn't really even know where self-love would begin. So that's step number one. Not even learning to love yourself again, but knowing, you know, why to love yourself to start with.
And just knowing what self-love is, you know, knowing about it, find out, you know, do a little research on it. And it's not rocket science, but it's not easy to do. It's just little things that you do for yourself to care for yourself. It can be as simple as making sure that you get 8 hours of sleep a night and don't drive yourself ragged, you know. It can be as little as, you know, realizing the things that you're good at doing and write it down. Realizing the things that make you happy, the small things, you know, whether it be to call a friend, whether it be to speak with someone in your family, whether it be to take a walk, whatever it is that makes you feel good and makes you feel loved. And you have to give yourself those things. You cannot seek out all that stuff in someone else or wait on someone else to give it to you, because you can't give someone love if you don't love yourself. I'm a firm believer in that. Don't expect to love someone else if you can't love yourself. And the other things that really, it all works together, is a self-esteem. Self-esteem and self-love, I think, are very related to each other and intertwined. Self-esteem, you really got to spend time on this one. I mean, it's something that is so important, and especially in our American culture. I don't think our women are, not women, but let's go back to girls, young girls. They're just not taught how to really have good self-esteem in our culture. It's just not something that, you know, we get a handbook on. And it's something that you have to learn. And learning it is not so easy, but it's not, like I said, it's not rocket science. You just have to do it. Self-esteem, you know, you got to, one way to increase your self-esteem is be around people that make you feel good. You know, cut down on people that make you feel bad. And I know all of you out there listening know what I'm talking about. You know, if you have friends that treat you negatively, say negative things to you, or family members, you know, limit your contact. You don't deserve that, because that's someone that feels bad about themselves, and they're going to pull you down too. You don't need that when you're trying to build your self-esteem. You want to be around people that love and care about you and also appreciate you. Know the things you're good at when you start increasing your self-esteem. You know, what are you good at?
I just want to say one thing about that, Misty. I think that it's really important to note that anyone who, you know, you're in a toxic relationship with, as I call it, you really have to divorce yourself from that person, even if it is a family member. I know that I had to divorce myself from my father 15 years ago after having a lifetime of toxicity with him.
Mm-hmm.
Always making me feel inadequate, or I wasn't worthwhile, or I wasn't good enough,
mm-hmm.
or I didn't meet his standards.
Exactly.
And my father was really crazy. I mean, you know, really crazy. But because mm-hmm. I grew up with it, I didn't know any differently, and I always felt, you know, that I was disappointing him because he made me feel as if I was disappointing him. And
mm-hmm.
there came a time in my life where I had to say, I know this is my father, but I can never feel good about myself because he won't allow me to.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I wrote him a letter, and I said to him, unfortunately, at this point in my life, I have to divorce you
mm-hmm.
because you've done nothing but make me feel bad about myself.
Wow.
And I said, I can't be a strong mother for my children if I keep feeling mm-hmm. that I'm inadequate in every way. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I explained that I had to, you know, leave the marriage for that reason. I can't
mm-hmm.
let, even though he's my father, I still can't let him sit and influence my life that way.
Exactly.
And I think that many of our women have toxic relationships with their families, and they have to know how to walk away from it. I mean, and
absolutely.
You don't have to feel guilty about it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to feel proud of yourself that you have the strength to do it. Don't you feel that's the case?
It absolutely. You have to. You know, and one of the first steps can be sitting down and identifying who's positive and who's negative in your life. And you really have to limit those negative contacts, because when you're building your self-esteem, they're going to tear you down. They will tear you down every time. You cannot rebuild fast enough for negativity to tear you down. And
that's why you have to rid yourself of all the messages that you're getting from wherever you're getting. You know, like Missy always says, you can find positive people around you. And a good way to just start in feeling better about yourself is to go to a friend who really cares about you and say, what is it you like about me? I know that may sound really simplistic, but it's a good starting point. If you can't find something to like in yourself, obviously if other people like you, you have to find out why. And sit down and write down what they're telling you and look at it every day. You know, they say because you're a good friend, because you're loyal, because you're compassionate, because you're smart, because you're funny. You know, and these are little key words that you have to remind yourself of every day. This is what I am. This is who I am.
Right.
And this is the way that you start learning who you are, right?
Exactly. And you start, you know, I remember when I was first going, you know, through my divorce and trying to, I was a mess. I was trying to figure out who I was. I felt so broken. And one of the things that helped build me up, I kept a little notebook, and I would make lists of things that I like to do. Because it had been so long since I had tried different things or even experienced different things, I didn't know what I wanted to do anymore or what I would enjoy doing anymore. So what I would do, I would force myself to try something new. It could be simple as trying a new restaurant or, going to an antique market, just something, anything. It didn't matter. It could be very novel. But it was a success, and that's so important. In building your self-esteem, you need to find small successes to build on. I mean, don't plan something huge that's going to set you up for failure. Do something really small. You know, a lot of women I work with are not comfortable going to places by themselves. You know, they feel very self-conscious of that. So, you know, set up a little thing to go to something like a public area, maybe a farmer's market or something where other people are by themselves. You know, just build on something, some type of little success. Don't, you know, plan to travel around the world by yourself the first week. You know, that would set you up for failure. Do something small. Do it small chunks at a time. And when you get those little successes, you'll be so proud of yourself. And that's what happens. You know, when you start getting that way, you start building more and more and more. And I would keep like a little list of things I enjoyed to do. And also, on the flip side of that list, I would make a list of things that I wanted to try. You know, to increase my sense of being adventurous. And it was so fun. And that's something I still do today. I enjoy it so much. And some things I like and some things I don't like. The things I like, I continue to do. And it's fun. It makes life fun. It really does. And, you know, this stuff just doesn't show up for you. You have to work towards it. You know, Bonnie, I hear it so often. People think, well, I should be happy now. Well, yeah, but you got to work for it. You know, you got to do some of these little things that are so simple as asking other people what they see good in you. It sounds so simple, but I can promise you one thing. The simple things are what will give you the movement and the building up of yourself. It's those simple things that really count.
Missy, I would like to give you some good advice on what you can do to make yourself happy tomorrow.
Okay, what?
Leave your dishes in the sink.
Okay. You know what? They're already in the sink, my dear.
Well, don't get them out tonight.
And you know what else I do?
Go to bed and feel good about it.
I will. I will go to bed and I'll feel good about it. And another thing that I do that I feel good about, too, is when I get a fresh tube of toothpaste, I always squeeze it from the top. It's just for me.
Yeah, I like squeezing it from the top, too. I don't believe
it. I always get in trouble for not squeezing it from the bottom. So every time I get a fresh tube of toothpaste, it's always squeezed from the top. And that's something that brings me so much pleasure, you know?
Yeah,
it's almost worth going to buy a toothpaste
every day. To do.
Exactly.
Do whatever you weren't allowed to do in your marriages.
Exactly.
Do that as a way of fighting back, right?
So that's
well, anyway,
the rambling.
Anyway, unfortunately, our time is up for tonight, and Missy, the hour really went fast, and we hope that our women out there who are listening really learned a little bit about emotional manipulation. If you would like the articles, just write to me at bonkaye@aol.com. And so, Missy, it's time for us to say goodnight and goodbye to our listeners. So let's start.
Yeah.
Yep, tonight, love to all of you. And in 2 weeks from now, we're going to have a special guest, our friend Carol, who comes on from the Straight Spouse Network, who's always very interesting when she comes on our show.
Mm-hmm.
Keep listening, and it will keep helping you. Have a wonderful night, and good night, everyone.